Whitney is, its origin starts in the 1750s. It was a rice and indigo plantation, and it was started by German immigrants. And so, originally started in the 18th century by immigrants that really were escaping. They really were refugees and saw this opportunity to escape Germany, escape war, and be able to hopefully start their own lives and be successful and have their own land.
Welcome to Tilling the Soil, a podcast dedicated to discussing the unique successes and challenges of preserving the history of enslaved people in the United States. This is a project of Whitney Plantation, located in Wallace, Louisiana, a former plantation site dedicated to telling the story of slavery from the perspective of enslaved people. Tilling the Soil was funded by a 2021 Rebirth grant from the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Your hosts are Amber Mitchell and Dr. Joy Banner. Welcome to Tilling the Soil, a podcast about Whitney Plantation, a slavery museum on the site of a former sugar plantation here in Louisiana. My name is Amber Mitchell, and I'm the Director of Education, and I'm also serving as co-host of our podcast, Tilling the Soil. And I'm joined by
Joy Banner, the Director of Communications here at Whitney.
So Tilling the Soil has been a project that has been a long time coming here at Whitney in various forms and formats, but always in the thoughts of those who have been tasked with program creation. And so we finally have been able to get ourselves launched. And so for this first episode of our first season, we wanted to go into a little bit of who is Whitney Plantation, why we're doing this particular podcast. And so for our first season of Tilling the Soil, which hopefully this will be the first and not the last, we've invited several esteemed scholars and experts in the fields of history, public humanities, museum studies, and of course, plantation history, especially to discuss the various aspects of the many facets of interpreting slavery at Whitney Plantation and how they then feed into our larger ecosystem of plantation sites and other sites of subjugation in both Southeast Louisiana, the larger state of Louisiana, across the South, and of course, throughout our country. We'll discuss everything from working here at Whitney Plantation to plantation tourism to preserving the original structures that are unique to our site, amongst all kinds of other unique and special conversations that we'll be having this season. But again, for our first episode, we just wanted to make sure we gave you a background on the origins of Whitney Plantation as a historic site and the reasons that we started this podcast. So with that, Joy, my dear friend, Dr. Joy Banner, can you give us first a brief description about Whitney Plantation and our history as a site?
Sure. So just to give everyone a context of where Whitney is located, we are about 45 miles west of New Orleans along the Mississippi River and in an area that is known as plantation country, which I think is problematic, but you may have heard that description in some of the marketing material that, you know, features all of the various plantation tours. And the reason why I say that is just to first give you all an understanding again of that context, and that Whitney is the only plantation, certainly within plantation country and within Louisiana, that focuses on enslaved people. And Whitney is, its origin starts in the 1750s. It was a rice and indigo plantation, and it was started by German immigrants. And so originally started in the 18th century by immigrants that really were escaping. They really were refugees and saw this opportunity to escape Germany. escape war and be able to hopefully start their own lives and be successful and have their own land. But what is challenging about that story, because it is, you know, in so many ways when we talk about indentured servitude or people immigrating here, especially originally, and, you know, having that pulling yourself up by the bootstraps type of sense to it, that the Germans were identified, the German immigrants were identified as people that could, that should have the land and that would have labor to hopefully provide for the colonists that were settled here in Louisiana, particularly through New Orleans. And so when we say, you know, we talk about, yes, picking yourself up by the bootstraps, what we also have to acknowledge is that the German immigrants who settled along this stretch of the Mississippi River, which is now known as a German coast, again, were given land and were given labor, and that labor were comprised of enslaved Africans. And so the first quote unquote founder of Whitney Plantation, it wasn't Whitney Plantation back then, was Ambrose Heidel. And so it was, would have been called Habitation Heidel. And that's where his story comes from. He started off as a small subsistence farmer who was given land and was also given labor. And within his generation, he's able to amass wealth and then pass that wealth on to his family. And so we see, you know, that generation for the Heidel family, whereby the people that were enslaved by the Heidels, there's a generational legacy of slavery that handed down. Whitney Plantation was repurchased in the 1860s by Bradish Johnson, who renamed it Whitney after his grandson. His grandson's last name was Whitney, and has been Whitney Plantation since then. Whitney operated until the 1970s as a working plantation. So even after emancipation, it was still a working plantation, and it was still carrying on a legacy of subjugation and exploitation, which we also address, you know, throughout this podcast. So I think that I try to unpack that as much as I can, Amber, but please feel free to jump in and add, yeah, sure, your description of Whitney.
Sure. So thanks, Joy, for that sort of background. We also want to make sure that folks understand that, you know, as compared to what makes Whitney different from a lot of other plantation sites as a physical site is that it's much smaller. A lot of our buildings are much smaller as in comparison to some of these large, grandiose, big houses and hundreds of thousands of acres of land that were worked. In comparison, Whitney Plantation at its height had about 2,000 acres of land that were being cultivated, with the three major crops being indigo, rice, and sugar. For many plantation sites along the River Road, along the Great Mississippi River here in Louisiana, sugar became their primary raw good that allowed for these planters, these enslavers, to grow their wealth at the expense of the unfree people that they used to capitalize on cultivating the material that they had here. At its highest, Whitney Plantation had, over the course of its lifetime as a slave holding plantation, had about between 300 and 350 people on it. Mm-hmm. So at a certain time, at some of its highest points, specifically in 1834, we have records of about 135 people being here on site as enslaved people. I think at the end of the day, one of our major goals here and why it's very much important of why we are transforming narratives here specifically is because traditionally our longstanding community understanding, individual understanding, societal understanding of what slavery was, what slavery wasn't, who benefited, who didn't, and ultimately where it fits within our larger historical lexicon is constantly up for debate. And honestly, because history traditionally, in the words of Howard Zinn, is told through the lens of the victors, it's different to be able to come to a site where we're specifically centering the stories of the people who made this place what it was. Mm-hmm. Joy, if you want to maybe talk a little bit about our founder and why Whitney as a nonprofit, 501c3 nonprofit, exists today,
Right. Yes. So it's interesting when we say founder, because we have to, you know, characterize or qualify the historical founder versus, you know, the new founding of Whitney Plantation as a museum of slavery. So, yes. Yeah, so John Cummings purchased Whitney Plantation, I believe, in the late 80s or early 90s. And initially, as he tells it, or as he's told it to me, did not necessarily know which direction that he had envisioned for how the site was going to be interpreted. He's called himself a real estate collector. Okay. So he's a real estate collector. I want to maybe mogul, and saw Whitney as part of, you know, another interesting project for him. And he admitted, like, hey, it's a plantation. I'm a Southern guy. And it seems like, hey, it'd be interesting for me to have a plantation. But it was his research, and then also being in community, being in spaces with Gwendolyn Mitlow Hall and Dr. Seck, and also having access to the research and resources. Some of the research would accompany the purchase of Whitney, and really understanding what he was seeing in those research records. So things like seeing the auction price for a young woman that is exceedingly high, right? Comparatively, but then understanding that the reason why she is valued so much is because she had a lot of children, I think a dozen or so children by her mid-20s. And so seeing that reflected in the value that she was assigned. And so that's what made him realize that he did not understand the real story of slavery. He had not received that education. And so then dedicated Whitney to telling that story of slavery and educating the public. Because if he, you know, as someone who was an attorney, if he had not received that in his education, then chances are, of course, he was correct, that most people did not get that education. Yeah, so we spent 14 or 15 years restoring Whitney. And then we opened in 2014. To remember what year we're in. So we're approaching our seventh year since Whitney's founding in 2014.
And seven, eight years.
So we opened in December of 2014. So, and since then, Whitney, I think we're very grateful that we've had so many people from the country and from around the world that has resonated with the mission. In December of 2019, Whitney became officially a nonprofit 501c3. So John Cummings, who's the founder, stepped down, and we have been board governed since 2019. Just adding that, even though Whitney was not officially a nonprofit, all of the profit, if you will, returned to Whitney in some way, shape, or form. So that was money never taken out of it. And John Cummings donated the institution to its nonprofit designation, as you should say, in our institution that we are now.
Awesome. And so really this site is about a couple of things. One, educating the public about this history, about the people who made this space and made this community what it is, because we're very much a descendant community as well. We're in the middle of Wallace, Louisiana, Wallace, Edgard, here along the river on the west bank of the Mississippi River, very beautiful farmlands, very rich soil here. But we're also very much, very much a part of the familial history for several people who call this area home, in that we have the privilege to be able to tell the stories, not only just tell the stories, to share the triumphs of the survival of a people who we can see their descendants every day in the faces of our community members, and including some of our employees, just like Joy, who is a descendant. Always got to shout that out. I always have to shout that out. And at the same time, we're also encouraging people, just as John Cummings wanted to do in facing this history himself, is facing this history, but also facing ourselves. Because ultimately, the work that we're doing here at Whitney, although important, fits into this larger understanding of who we are as a society, how we interact with each other, how we see ourselves as African Americans, as descendants of enslaved people, myself included, although I'm not from here specifically, I definitely resonate with much of this because I am a descendant of enslaved people. Uh-huh. And so it's very important that we all understand our role in this history here as Americans and how it affects us to this very day. Uh-huh. So that's kind of the roots of this roots of Whitney Plantation, but also why we're kind of doing this in many ways.
Yeah. As people that, as staff that works here at Whitney, I think every day we are confronting this history and then confronting what our mission is and what we stand for, what we mean, and how people engage with the space and what makes us different. And then sometimes what makes us the same, right? Because this is still, it is a plantation. It is a place of, like we said, of brutality, of subjugation, of exploitation. And so we're always, I think, navigating what this place means or what it presents to us at any moment. I think what I've unpacked and what means the most to me about Whitney, and I love the fact that now we are, you know, an institution that's governed by a predominantly African-American board, because I think that to not have a white man as ownership of this plantation is very important. And I think that was very important to John Cummings. But then the fact that this is a Black space, right? So Whitney is not just about plantation sites who are integrating, who are, you know, putting more about enslaved people into their narratives, which I think is important and is necessary. And I don't want to take that away from anyone. But I think what makes Whitney different, and we hope that Whitney is different from the sense of the level of comfort that people of African descent can come to the plantation and at least know that their ancestors are going to be centered and that they are free, ironically, on a plantation to be able to talk about this history. And so there's very few spaces where, you know, I think that I can think of where we can sit down and be honest and ask questions about slavery and, you know, talk about, you know, our ancestors and what happened. You know, but also talk about, you know, the wonderful resourcefulness and the resistance that they had, where we don't have to be, where we're not judged in the way that we talk about our history. And so, you know, I think that for Whitney and working here, those are the aspects of it that helps me get through, you know, certainly some of the trauma that we face every day. And we just, you know, hope, and it's our goal to, we can always do better. We're figuring things out, you know. And so I think that this is always for any site, it's about evolution, it's about learning. And that has been really just the way that we interact every day on this site, and we do it with each other, has been one of the things that I love most about working here. Amber, so the name of our podcast is Tilling the Soil, and you were the one who came up with that fantastic name. So can you tell us why and how and what does it mean exactly?
Sure. Yeah. So when I came on board in June of 2021, you know, a podcast project had been on the minds of Whitney staff in some form or fashion for a long time. And so when I came on board and I had already had some experience with content creation and some form of podcasting, you know, it had always been a goal of mine to really kind of start one here. So we had just kind of started thinking about what it is that we wanted to do and what kind of resources we would need and things like that, but nothing truly serious. But then we all of a sudden were thrust into the realm of grants, because of course you need money to be able to do cool projects. And so we were lucky enough to be able to apply for a rebirth grant through the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. And it came very much at a timely point for us, the application process did, because we were soon thrust into the challenge that was Hurricane Ida. Literally the week that the grant application was due, we were hit by a Category 5 hurricane to this area, which devastated the community that we live in, St. John the Baptist Parish or County, depending on where you're listening from, just outside of New Orleans, widely affected. And so, you know, although we were in the middle of that, it became very much pressing that we continue to move forward with trying to get funds for this particular project. And thankfully we were successful. But I think what was really important for me in looking at the news every day, talking with guests that come here, as well as just my own personal experience, especially in our current social climate, where the history of people of color, but especially African Americans within American society, is constantly being questioned and pushed to the margins, being reversed from where we came from as far as being able to share that information with people, it became pretty critical that we go ahead and launch this project. As far as the title goes, Tilling the Soil is in direct reference to the reasons why Whitney Plantation is here. To till the soil is a term meaning to prepare the soil for growth, right? So you're preparing, you're plowing, you're using animals, you're using tools to rough up the earth so that it can be prepped and ready for growth. And so it's in direct reference to the reasons why Africans, African Americans, and in our context here in South Louisiana, Creoles of color were brought to the Americas in the 1600s to grow, to harvest, and to build plantations in the service of enslavers and what becomes American capital and capitalism. Over 12 million people were brought to these areas. And when I say areas, I'm meaning the Americas, North America, Central America, South America, as well as the Caribbean, were the largest mass movement of people in the history of our world, have been brought over to these areas with nothing but themselves. And so entitling the podcast Tilling the Soil, I wanted to continue to reclaim the agricultural practices that would have been central and important to this particular site and all other plantations in the United States, but reclaim it for our own benefit as African Americans, as descendants of enslaved people, to think critically about how do we prepare ourselves as museum professionals, as storytellers, historians, interpreters, administrators, how do we prepare to do this kind of work daily? Because it is a special type of person who's able to come into a plantation site day in and day out and talk about this particular history. And it takes an even more special kind of person, specifically people who are descendants, who are willing to take the time out, Black and white descendants, who are willing to take the time out to talk about this often contentious and challenging history. And then more importantly, how can we then prepare others to do the same? So in a way, we're preparing a place for our ancestors to tell their own stories through the work that we do here. And in order for those seeds to grow, we have to first prepare the soil to receive that information. And so we're preparing the soil of ourselves as members of the leadership team of this particular site. We're preparing the visitors who will be listening to this podcast, or hopefully be listening to this podcast, for what they're going to be prepared for when they arrive here. But then most importantly, preparing everyone else for their particular journey in interpreting this history as well. And so thus, Tilling the Soil. That's where it came from.
I love that title. I love the title and the idea, again, you know, we are, and I love the connection to the agricultural practices and our ancestors' agrarian experience and skills. But then, like, we're breaking through. We're doing something new. We're prepared, even though we're not, we're characterized as doing things new. And in the sense, I think that there are, we have a unique perspective. And so we're tilling the soil that way. But then the idea of preparing ourselves, I think, is so powerful. So really just love the name. And yeah.
Thanks.
Just like it.
I thought of it all by myself. It came to me in a dream. I'm sure some ancestor came knocking on my head at some point and was like, girl, think of something witty and charming. And so that's what came to me at some point. But so then once we decided on what that title was going to be and what our purpose was for this project, Joy and I then decided to sit down and discuss, what does this look like? What does the content look like? What do our potential guests look like? And to be frank, it was really challenging to narrow it down into something, because we could go into this history for years. We could sit and talk to you all about every single aspect of plantation history, of museum studies, of historical stuff, referring to this site and other sites forever. But we can't do that in, you know, 8 to 10 episodes. So we had to sort of narrow down what we wanted. So just based on the time period that we were planning this out, one of the major things that we wanted to kind of touch on were real topical and relatable things for museum professionals who will be listening, as well as folks who are just interested in just this topic generally. So, of course, one of the most immediate things, given the time that we put this application for the grant together, that was important to discuss is preservation. Whitney Plantation was abandoned for a good long time, and the only reason that John Cummings was able to purchase it was because a petrochemical company was unable to prove that the site itself was lacking historical significance. So several of the buildings here left on site after 1970 are only here because of neglect, preservation by neglect. They're being left here to sort of rot. And so it's important to talk about, why is it that that these sorts of sites can and do exist, and what goes into taking care of them, what goes into stewarding them, especially buildings like slave quarters and other buildings that are directly related to slave life, because they weren't ever really meant to survive this long. They're cheaply made with poor materials, but they're still here, right? We still have two that are in existence that are original slave quarters here at Whitney, especially when we think about climate change. We're here in the middle of Hurricane Alley here in Louisiana. We're getting hit by hurricanes all the time now. Climate change is not that far away. We're living it every day just here on the Gulf Coast, as well as, of course, the issues of petrochemical, the issues of big industry, steady encroachment on this area. So for us, it was very important for one of our topics to be preservation. Second topic for me, which was really important, was, of course, education, because I'm an educator. As director of education, of course, I'm going to take some time out to talk about education and of course, interpretation, about why does it matter that we speak from a Black perspective about this history, and why is interpretation important, especially when the vast majority of our interpretive staff, including those who decide what story is told on site, what story is threaded throughout the site, are Black people and Black descendants. Right. So that is important for us as well. Joy, what were two of the topics that you thought were going to be super important for us to include as part of the podcast project?
Well, and you hit on a couple of aspects that's important, that I thought was important to discuss. And I think it shows how there's so much intertwining of these different topics and how difficult it was for us to nail down exactly what we wanted to talk about, because we would go down the rabbit hole and on lots of different aspects. So one of the topics definitely that I wanted to talk about was plantation tourism. So as a person that, you know, is descended from the men and women that were enslaved here at Whitney and growing up in the tourism industry, so plantation tourism became very popular in the area around the same time that I was born. So this tourism industry grew up as I grew up within it. And so to see plantations and these houses, more accurately, the way that they were presented, the grandeur, the wealth, the luxury, the fantasy of come here and have a moment of being a sugar baron, and being, you know, mistress of the plantation or master of the plantation, that's what informed the way that I grew up. So as an adult and looking back and seeing the impact, the legacies of slavery, you know, the industrial encroachment, the poverty, the legacies of slavery were still plaguing our Black descendant community and our rural community. Just being frustrated and not seeing that the accuracy of that history portrayed, and then being made invisible, having your ancestors made invisible. And so the way that sites like Whitney, I will say, there's a discomfort with us talking about slavery and the reality of plantations. Well, I say discomfort, but really discomfort from the tourism side of things and folks not, you know, really having embraced the truth of their own sites. And so I thought that it was, you know, very important for us to be able to discuss those things because we are not going to be able to heal from the legacies of slavery until we address the truth. And that truth comes in so many different forms and so many different aspects of, you know, of labor, of race, of things that we believe that even for people that are not of African American descent and who think, well, it really has nothing to do with me. If you're not understanding the slavers, understanding the institution of slavery, then you're not able to take a step back and understand how, you know, again, our system of labor that we think is normal, that we think is status quo, how that has been informed by, you know, an exploitative system. And so you are experiencing the negative, you're experiencing the consequences of it all. So it's important for all of us to understand this history. Another topic, and I just kind of touched on it, is what it means to be part of a descendant community that's still located in proximity to the sites that enslaved our ancestors. And so, first of all, we don't use the term Black descendant community to be exclusive. We have a shared history. We, you know, I think the latest figure I saw, at least 95% of people of African descent in America comes from, you know, we're from people that were enslaved. And so we do share, you know, an important history together. But I do think that living close to sites and being exposed to that marketing and the promotion of tourism and being able to see the way that, for example, industry and the manifestations of it in our contemporary experiences still linked directly back to, you know, the plantation is, you know, it's a unique perspective. So we certainly, you know, don't characterize ourselves as a descendant community to be exclusive, but we want to highlight and we want to uplift the invisibility of our ancestors, make sure that their labor and that their culture and that their contributions are uplifted. And address those specific legacies of slavery that we're able to see because we're part of this local descendant community.
We also wanted to make sure that we highlighted discussions with both historians on a national scale, as well as people doing great work in this realm, both nationally and locally here in the New Orleans area, but also with our colleagues specifically, those here on site that are doing the work and making sure that the soil is tilled and ready to go every day for the hundreds of thousands of visitors that have come through our door since 2014. Specifically, thinking about our friends in visitor services and operations with their director, Yvonne Holden, who has to take into account all kinds of things, including, you know, current labor practices, as well as crafting policies that take into account the historical forced labor at this site, the lived realities of people today and the challenges that come along with being people who live in these rural areas outside of New Orleans, who are our primary employees here on site, as well as speaking with our executive director, Ashley Rogers, who's been on staff since 2014 and maybe a little bit before. Sorry, Ashley, I'm butchering how long you've been on site. But she's been here long enough to see how Whitney Plantation has grown so much over time, as well as growing into her own directorial role there. And lastly, of course, we'd be remiss to not shout out Dr. Ibrahima Sek, our director of research, and truly the man behind Whitney Plantation as a historic site, because without Dr. Sek's ongoing immense work in research in both French and Creole and Arabic here in Southeast Louisiana, throughout the United States, in Europe, and of course, in his home country of Senegal, he's been doing this work here at this site and prepping it to become what it is today for the last 20 years. And it's his work, specifically the book Bokife Gumbo, that our interpretation is largely based upon here on site, that goes into the history of Whitney Plantation, Habitation Hydel, and the people who made this place work.
Yes, and we definitely wanted to uplift Black museums and in their history. So there is a rich tradition of Black museums. And, you know, unfortunately, museums don't get as much of the attention that they deserve. And so they're often left out of the conversation, which means that there are different aspects and importance about being interpreters, being a staff member at a Black museum that, or even we say, you know, a Black museum, but also Black museum professionals. So I most of the Black museum professionals are in museums that are not Black museums. And so the nuances, the challenges, and also the opportunities of Black museums for professional staff. So that we wanted to make sure that we talked about this conversation about Black history and its interpretation, and then about the sites that we can, that are being formed, that have been in existence, you know, for decades, and, you know, maybe about some of the Black museums that we will hopefully have in the future. We were very excited to talk about that aspect of it.
And of course, last but not least, I think both of our favorite topic that we kind of talk about during this, during our podcast, a topic that we both knew we just absolutely had to discuss were the myths about plantations and slavery.
Yes, that was it's a funny topic for us. And as you can imagine, working at a former plantation site, and the many myths that people ask us about, and, you know, there is no myth that if you've heard about it, I like the fact that people will at least ask us about it so we can clear the myth up. But yes, it is one of the things that we actually can chuckle about sometimes and have a moment of brevity in some of these myths related to slavery. And I think that that our episode certainly speaks to, is educational, and yes, it's entertaining as well.
In short, we have a jam-packed agenda for our first season. Very exciting. And ideally, we'll continue to hopefully have this podcast into the future. But at the very least, we have a wonderful selection of topic ideas for this upcoming season. And I just want to also make sure we give a special shout out to all of the guests, the wonderful historians, museum professionals, public historians, educators who were willing to take time out to talk with us this season as part of our podcast. And we're really excited to share their knowledge with you, because I hope that you all will be just as enlightened as we've been over the course of recording these episodes.
Yes. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, you can always come and see us in person at Whitney Plantation. We are open. We are touring. And you can visit whitneyplantation.org to book your tour.
Awesome. Well, that's the end of today's exploratory episode about tilling the soil. I'm Amber.
And I'm Joy.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. This has been an episode of Tilling the Soil, a Whitney Plantation podcast. Want to experience what Whitney Plantation has to offer? Come and visit us at 5099 Highway 18 in Wallace, Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans. You can also connect with us on social media at Whitney Plantation on all platforms. Thanks for listening. Funding for the 2021 Rebirth Grant has been administered by the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities and provided by the National Endowment for the Humanities as part of the American Rescue Plan and the NEH Sustaining the Humanities through the American Rescue Plan Initiative. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities.